The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
It's Lifeline with Craig Roberts. He's the host of Northern California's longest-running conservative talk show. He's a man with a message, a conservative with compassion. He's Lifeline's own Craig Roberts.
Good afternoon, Northern California. Welcome. Just about 5 minutes after the hour, 5 p.m., as we welcome you to another edition of Lifeline. Keeping you company Monday through Friday at this time, as we typically do, addressing issues that impact your life, your world, and your Christian walk. Down through the years that this program has been on the air, and I will put in a disclaimer here that I started the show when I was about four, I had the pleasure on many, many occasions to have Zig Ziglar as a guest on this program. And, of course, Zig, always the ultimate in brightening your day, even if you were having a heck of a day. Zig knew how to bring a positive outlook on things that took you back to the stuff that was important and brought that strong biblical perspective into the importance of having the right attitude before God. And certainly he impacted the lives of literally millions of people. One would think that the ultimate in having the right attitude and growing up to be the right kind of person, so to speak, in God's eyes, would be anybody who would grow up in the household of Zig Ziglar and the redhead, as he used to affectionately refer to her as. Well, my next guest has got a bit of a different story, an eye-opener to be sure. She is the youngest daughter of Zig Ziglar, Julie Ziglar Norman. She joins us tonight to talk about not only the experiences of growing up Ziglar, but also the incredible walk that she has been through and the pathway that God has taken her down, all detailed inside of the pages of a new book called Growing Up Ziglar, A Daughter's Broken Journey from Heartache to Hope. And Julie, great to have you on the program.
Craig, thank you for having me, and I'm glad to know that you're very familiar and personally know my dad.
Your dad was a tremendous man, and we always delighted when we knew that he was going to be either on a book tour or coming to the San Francisco Bay Area for one of the many motivational seminars that he was an important part of, that he would either drop by in studio on a couple of occasions or join us by phone for an interview. And that's why I've got to tell you, Julie, remembering your dad and knowing how encouraging he was to so many of us, when I saw the subtitle of the book, I thought, well, my goodness. And at first I thought, I got confused with your sister, Susan. And I thought, well, maybe this is a book about the story of the challenges that your sister went through facing a pulmonary disease for her entire life. And then when I got under the book and realized, oh, no, wait, this is a different daughter, I got to tell you, I was a bit flabbergasted, as I suppose a lot of your readers will be.
Oh, yes, absolutely. It's not what you'd expect from a daughter of Zig's. And that's why I worked so hard to hide the kind of lifestyle I was leading, because I admire and love and adore my father, and there was, I didn't want to hurt him or embarrass him or be ashamed to him. And yet I had this whole separate life because I was really good at putting on a positive face in front of my parents.
You characterize very early on inside the pages of Growing Up Ziglar having to live with a life of regret and shame and guilt and grief and pain and depression. And many folks have got to wonder, well, my goodness, what was going on?
Oh, there was so much going on. And, you know, it started, Craig, I mean, it started with just a move to Dallas, Texas from Columbia, South Carolina. And the change of pace was so drastic. The things the kids were doing here were things I never even heard of. But it really started with a jealous cheerleader whose ex-boyfriend got a little crush on me, she decided to start a rumor about me. And it took such hold and such root that none of the good kids would have anything to do with me. And ultimately, I ended up running with the kids who were in a lot of trouble, and I made a lot of bad choices, and I earned that bad reputation I'd been wrongly given. And that's when I started. From the time I was 13, I was doing things that I knew my parents wouldn't approve of, but I was such a good person at pretending like things were okay. I made good grades. I was never late. I wasn't rebellious, rude. I didn't act out in any way. I was responsible. They just didn't have a clue what I was doing when I left the house.
A lot of us do that, don't we? I mean, your case is perhaps slightly different in the sense that you were trying to keep a lot of this from a very positive, very famous father.
Yes.
And yet a lot of us, I think, when you talk about the arena of wrong choices, whether we talk mm-hmm. about the wrong choices that took place in our life before we made a commitment to Christ, or even sometimes the bad choices that we make after we come to the Lord, you know, that sense of we know to do good and yet we do it not?
Right. And that was my big problem. I continued to do that, which I did not want to do. Even after I met the Lord at a Bill Gothard seminar, Dad actually sent his girls to a Bill Gothard seminar before he became a Christian because he heard it was a good, good seminar.
You know, I remember those back in the 1970s. Yes. I went to one up, I forget where it was now. It was Bill Gothard's Institute in Basic Youth Conflicts.
That's right. That's right.
And God bless them for what they were doing and speaking truth into the lives of young people. And I guess in the end, a lot of this comes down to even when you've got a famous father, and this is true in your case or for someone maybe that grows up as a pastor's kid, I guess a lot of it ultimately comes down to the kind of choices that we make for ourselves, doesn't it?
Right. And the ability to overcome the problems has to do with accepting responsibility for each and every one of those choices. You can't lay blame, you know, until you own it. I mean, how can we be forgiven for something we won't even admit responsibility for? And a big part of my book is about that. It's about God. I mean, he was so kind to me to reveal to me in a timely way that I could one by one let go of the things that had become had such a stronghold on my life, so that I could be his and so that I could serve him and glorify him. Even after all of that, I mean, my shameful behavior and to have parents who, from the generation they come from, who stand behind me. And every time my mother says, and I gave your book to so-and-so and Jeannie got one, I'm like, you can't imagine what that does to my heart, because there I am revealing, you know, this really sad background of bad choices, and yet my parents are so proud of where God has taken me today that they are open to sharing anything that will help others. And I'm proud to be a part of that legacy that my dad began.
Did you have to work hard, Julie, to hide a lot of this? And I ask that question because, you know, on the surface, some might think, well, that's easy, you know. Her dad is a world-famous motivational speaker and book author and traveling the country and out of town all the time. And yet I always had the impression when your dad would join me on this program, so many of the references that he would share and examples when he talked about positive thinking and keeping your life in line with the teachings of God's Word and keeping mm-hmm. the right attitude to glorify God, he would refer back to family so often. And the redhead, I mean, even before I saw you refer to your mom that way in the book, I said, I remember that. Zig always talked about the redhead back home. I get the impression that your dad was very involved in the family life in spite of the fact that he did a lot of traveling. So I have to wonder then, was that an illusion, or did you really have to work hard to keep a lot of this, what was going on in your own life, hidden from your parents?
I had to work hard, Craig. When Daddy was home, he was fully home. and fully involved and fully aware of, you know, what was going on. Most of my shenanigans happened while he was on the road, because he was a lot more perceptive about worldly things than my mother. And my mother was very busy raising, my brother was born almost 10 years after me, and she was keeping up with him. I mean, he was toddler and, you know, 3 and 4 and 5, that busy age when I was going through that worst teenage stage. Mm-hmm. And so she was distracted. But when Daddy was home, I mean, if a young man called me for a date on Friday for Saturday night, he wouldn't allow me to go because he said they waited too late. That I was their second choice and he wasn't going to let me go. He was, he was strict in that regard. But unfortunately, he did travel, you know, a great deal. And that's when I was out. See, I worked. And I started working when I was 14, and I always got out of school early. And then I would usually hang out, you know, after work was really over. And that's when I met older boys and started, you know, just getting involved in stuff I really shouldn't be.
If you've just joined the conversation tonight, we're visiting with Julie Ziegler Norman. She is the youngest daughter of Zig Ziegler, and I suspect a lot of you remember Zig from the books and the traveling and the speaking engagements that he had here in the San Francisco Bay Area. Certainly one of my favorite guests down through the years, and that's why I say, and when I first read the book, I thought, my goodness, boy, this is an eye-opener. So growing up as the daughter of Zig Ziegler is not guaranteed right attitude or right choices, and I guess in the end, the important lesson that all of us here have to learn is we have to be accountable singularly and directly to God. Even if we have a famous daddy or mom or we're a pastor's kid, we are uniquely responsible for the choices that we make. Back to more of our conversation with Julie Ziegler in just a moment.
And now back to Lifeline with Craig Roberts.
Our conversation continues with Julie Ziegler Norman. She is the youngest daughter of motivational speaker and best-selling author Zig Ziegler. A new book out called Growing Up Ziegler, A Daughter's Broken Journey from Heartache to Hope. You know, we're talking about that issue of choices. You mentioned earlier on, and I don't want to give the whole plot away here, Julie, but you mentioned early on in the book that one of the first wrong choices you made was at the age of 18, you'd met up a guy that had a mutual interest in horses.
Right.
And certainly can relate to that. I'm a big horse fan myself. But you ended up marrying this guy whom not long after the ink was still drying on the license, you found out that he was significantly older than you thought. You were 18, he was 36, and then later on you found out about the 4 kids by 3 previous marriages. Wow, there's a start for you.
Yeah, it's pretty shocking. And my dad had him investigated after we were married. He tried very hard to stop the marriage, but by that point, Craig, I had been living in such sexual sin. I really believed that if I got married, that would take me out of that realm of sinning and that then I could maybe get right with God. That was part of it. And I had secretly lived with this man, which was totally against, you know, what I had been taught and raised to do. And I felt like in my little uneducated mind, because my dad wasn't a Christian when I was growing up. I was 17, almost 17, when he finally became a Christian. I missed the biblical training and time in church. We went a little bit, but not enough to have any impact on me. But I really, because of my experience with Bill Gothard, I knew that I shouldn't be doing that. I didn't want to do it. I didn't know how not to do it. And so I thought, you know, if I marry this man, then I can make it right. And even when Dad called with the facts and the truth, this man was really a total horse trader.
Yeah, no pun intended, yeah.
In every sense, I felt like I'd married him and I needed to do what I could to make it work and honor that commitment. And in the end, when it became, you know, physically violent and there was also some evidence that he had been unfaithful, truly it was by that time, I was so beaten down. He told me I was stupid and unattractive, and, you know, I always believed what other people told me, not what my dad told me. And by the time I left him, it was because when he picked me up to beat me, I almost dropped our baby on the floor. And I cared enough about her, even though I didn't care enough about me, to leave. And that's what caused that break, was he was jealous of the baby and the division of attention. And I, something awoke in me when I almost dropped the baby. And that's when I left.
But ironically, you went out of that bad relationship, kind of out of the frying pan into the fire.
Yes.
Now, while God has been gracious in bringing restoration and healing, and I understand your current marriage, what, 28 plus years, am I right? Something like that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
But you actually had something in common with your current second husband, too, in that as much as the first one was all in the equestrian style, this had more to do with mixed cocktails.
Yes, I had no idea that part of the great attraction was I'd finally met a man who could afford to buy me as many drinks as I actually wanted. And, you know, I just, by then I had buried a lot of my shame and my depression and regret in alcohol, because I didn't know what to do with negative feelings, and actually had trouble identifying what sad meant at one point. But I used alcohol as a way to cope. And when I met my present husband, he liked his drink too. And we spent the first 2.5 years of our marriage kind of drinking at each other until he finally got to a point where I'd had enough. And I went to a 12-step program for people who are friends and family of alcoholics, and it was there that I learned I had my own problem that I needed to deal with.
You said something a moment ago, Julie. Let me take you back. You said that you listened to what others had to say about you more than you did your father. And I want to have you expand upon that, because, you know, I often now joke with my own father now that I'm well into my years, but I've said to Dad, when conversations about, you know, the wild and woolly days come up, I say, you know, it's amazing the older I've gotten, how smart you've gotten. Yeah. Isn't it true? When we're younger, we just think we've got all the answers and our parents are incredibly stupid, and what would they possibly know? And then as we grow older and mature and marry and have kids and go through our own life experiences, suddenly we realize, you know, Mom and Dad weren't so dumb after all. But talk to me a bit about that perspective where you said that you listened more to others than your dad when it came to talking about you.
I did, and it started real early. It started with me knowing that teachers told them that not to expect much of me academically. Mm-hmm. Apparently, I was a little ADD or something, had some learning issues, and they just told my parents, don't expect too much of Julie. So I wasn't required to make A's and B's, you know, like my sisters, because they'd been told not to expect much. And I lived all the way down to those expectations. And, you know, I was the yellow bird reader. I wasn't the blue bird who was top or the red bird who was next. I was the yellow bird who was last. And all of those little, you know, defining things had an effect on me. And I had a girl tell me in eighth grade, I think I was on the bus, she said, boy, you're dense. And I went home and looked it up. And from then on, I was afraid to open my mouth because I was afraid somebody would make a judgment about how smart I was. And just things like that fed into me, because I believe that my father told me nice and encouraging things because he loved me. He couldn't see me for who I really was. And, you know, isn't that what he does, is he encourages people? And I wasn't sure it was genuine. I mean, I thought those things couldn't possibly be true about me, because I knew what thoughts went on in my own head. And I had a lot of self-loathing because of the choices I was making and what I knew to be true about me that he didn't know.
Funny how much of that, Julie, is so much like our relationship with the Lord, that we would tend to rather believe the bad press and the negative thoughts and the junk that either we gets fed to us by others or by the media or by the devil himself, and not want to believe what God believes about us, that he sees us not as we are, but as we can be and would be perfected in him.
That's right, and that's how Satan really gets the upper hand, is he continues. I mean, we have a saying in the 12-step program, you know, your mind is like a bad neighborhood. You should never go there alone. And the thinking that we get ourselves into a wad with is really not at all what Christ would have us think. And until you actually get into the Word yourself, for yourself, and you learn the character of God and what he wants for us, you can't think otherwise. I mean, I pray every day for God to give me wisdom and knowledge and the power to carry it out. You know, help me to see that wisdom. Give me the knowledge. Give me the power, Lord, to carry this out, to carry it forward, because I certainly can't do it. And that's why I'm so free in Christ today, is because I finally know his character and know what he wants for me and from me. You know, I know what my purpose is as one of his, and that freedom is really why I wrote the book. I wrote the book for people who are sick and tired of living with the consequences of their choices, and especially for the Christian who sits in church, who has been forgiven and they know it, and yet they won't share any of their past because of shame they shouldn't even have anymore.
And it's amazing, amazing, Julie, the way so often we can't come to the point of understanding our purpose in life until we understand his purpose for us.
That's right. And it all has to do, Craig, with being available, willing, and obedient to do whatever he puts in front of you. And when you've surrendered your life to that point where you care more about what he wants than what you want, that's when you become totally free, and the shame leaves, the depression leaves. There's just no more fear and there's no more worry once you really hand it over to him. But that fear of letting go and what he might demand of you, it's pretty overwhelming. And then when you get over that hump, you go, oh my goodness, you know, what was I concerned about? His care for me is so much greater than anything I could have thought of for myself.
If you've just joined into the conversation here tonight, we're visiting with Julie Ziegler-Norman. Yes, the same Ziegler that you know and love, the youngest daughter of Zig Ziegler, the wildly popular motivational speaker, best-selling author. She's written a new book called Growing Up Ziegler, A Daughter's Broken Journey from Heartache to Hope. It really is a unique story and one that ought to catch the attention of all of us. I mean, for the PKs in the audience, you know, just because dad is famous or very successful in the pulpit ministry doesn't mean that your life is going to turn out picture perfect, because it all comes down to the choices that you make as an individual, that we all make as an individual. How do we develop the right attitude? How do we make the right choices? We'll talk a bit more about that, and we'll come back and talk about the challenge list as well. That is our conversation with Julie Ziegler-Norman continues here on this edition of Lifeline.
And now back to Lifeline with Craig Roberts.
Back to our conversation. Julie Ziegler-Norman, our guest, look at the book Growing Up Ziegler, A Daughter's Broken Journey from Heartache to Hope. For you, Julie, what was the major turning point? We talked about your experiences dealing with the difficulty in marriages and so forth, the tragic early passing of your sister Susan from a pulmonary disease, as I recall. For you, the change in making the right choice and understanding eventually that Daddy had it right all along, how did that go about happening?
Well, it actually started when I got help through a 12-step program for my alcoholism. That's where the journey back to God and learning, you know, beginning to learn what it was he had for me through his word. And it was a long process, because even though the alcohol was removed, I had to begin to live what I would call pretty raw. And, you know, if things are raw when you're used to living with something that dampens your emotions like alcohol. And even after that, several years, 11 years after my husband and I sobered up, I experienced a separation, but it was during that year of separation that I understood that I needed, if I would get my relationship with God right, then I could become the kind of wife that he always intended my husband to have, and vice versa. And that year apart was spent really getting to know Christ. And It was a process of little things being removed one at a time. And after a year, we got back together. But then I had some, I had had two abortions when I was a single parent. So 7 years I was single. And that was what I had buried deepest, Craig. And that is what hurt me the most to bring to the surface, because I knew in my heart of hearts that it was wrong, even as I tried to convince myself that, you know, the abortions were legal and I was getting one. I couldn't bear the thought of the shame. My father, by that point, was the Sunday school teacher at First Baptist Dallas. He had a huge, you know, 300 people Sunday school every week and a lot of people from out of town. But beyond that, I was already raising one little daughter by myself with no help, and I told myself I didn't see how I could do it. But the truth was I was afraid that if I ever admitted that I had made a mistake that I deeply regretted, and I allowed myself to mourn the children I lost, I was afraid I would never quit. I would never stop crying. But with the help of a Bible study through a crisis pregnancy center for post-abortion syndrome, when I accepted the forgiveness that God had long ago given me, when I understood that I was white as snow to him and that there truly was not a single sin that was excluded, when I knew enough of his word to understand that totality of forgiveness, that's when I was set free. And until then, I was not able to fully serve him, because there was still a secret in my life. And you know, that old deal, you're only as sick as your secrets, is really, there's a lot of truth in that. Because as long as I have something I'm hiding, not just from you, but from me, I can't be authentically who I am and who God intended me to be. But I'm totally free now. I love my babies that are in heaven. I can't wait to see them. I named my daughter Winnie Beth, and my son is Robert Curtis. And they're children who are as alive in my heart today as my children, my living children here. And I can't tell you what that change has made in my life and my ability to glorify God and just serve him without fear and regret and shame.
Your dad, eventually fully aware of all that had transpired and how God had brought you full circle?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I'd just gone through the Bible study and been talking to Dad about it. I'd actually gotten counseling in regards to the abortion some years before, but somehow or other, it didn't you know, I didn't get that freedom to forgive myself. And Daddy at one point said, you know, I wonder if this is what God really, the purpose he has for me is to help you, you know, help women who have made this horrible decision for themselves and are living with the consequences, and to help save babies. And then right as he was starting to talk to post-abortive women to find out more about it, it's when he had his head injury and had short-term memory loss, and then he was unable to retain any new information. And so that turns out that wasn't for him, but he was that open to it, Craig. I mean, Daddy was always looking for how he might serve and help. and he was willing to jump in there. He was heartbroken that, you know, I hadn't felt like I could trust them with that information or share it when I was going through it. And of course, heartbroken because he missed out on two grandchildren.
Sure.
But yes, he's right behind me all the way.
Well, it's a great book, and we appreciate you sharing the candor of your experience. I know, no doubt, coming as a surprise to a lot of our listeners, as we would have expected just a perfect life in so many ways. And yet, you know, it's a human life, and it's one where, yeah, you know, at the end of the day, we all have to make the right choices. We all have to deal with the choices that we make. And attitude and perspective from a biblical viewpoint is so critically important. And you walk people through your heartache and your candid experience. And we sure appreciate you taking some time today, Julie, to share not just from the pain with our listeners, but then to the backside of the story, the victory side, the positive outcome of this all.
It's all about victory, and it's there for anyone who will seek him. Trust him.
The book again is called Growing Up Ziegler, A Daughter's Broken Journey from Heartache to Hope. And the new book, by the way, published by Guidepost, and you can order it through the usual suspects, Amazon.com. Of course, get it in any Bay Area bookstores. And thanks so much, Julie, for being with us. By the way, if you want to check out more, Julie continues to speak and write and do traveling and whatnot. You can get more information about her life and ministry online at JulieZieglerNorman.com. That's Julie Ziegler Norman, N-O-R-M-A-N, all one word, .com. And our thanks to Julie Ziegler for being with us on this edition of Lifeline.
And now back to Lifeline with Craig Roberts.
She's somebody's daughter, somebody's child.
She is somebody's daughter. You know, I don't think we ever think of the issue of pornography in that fashion. Typically, it's an unknown face without a name, somebody that doesn't seem to be connected in any level toward reality. And as a result, the purveyors of this, those who are making huge amounts of money at the distribution, publication and distribution of pornography, really don't think about the impact, and yet it has a significant impact, and not only on the lives of those who are consuming the material, but those who are participating in it from an economic standpoint. Steve Siller joins us on the program. He is founder of Music for the Soul and executive producer of part of the song you just heard there a moment ago, highlighted, Somebody's Daughter. And Steve, thanks so much for taking time to be with us tonight.
Craig, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You know, the lyrics to your song certainly bring it home back to a level of reality that I suspect most people who are trapped in a world of consuming of pornography, I don't quite know how to phrase that, don't really ever stop to think about the fact that, you know what, these are real people. These are real lives here.
Mm-hmm. Human beings. Whenever I talk to people about this out in churches and in schools and the like, I always ask the question, you know, if this woman in the video were your little sister, would that be okay? If it were your wife or your girlfriend or your mother, how would that be? And generally you just see heads start to drop around the room as people realize that these are human beings. And I think the thing that is so alarming is the desensitization that has gone on, and how we in the church have kind of allowed ourselves to be taken along with that tide rather than opposing it.
Yeah, indeed. And, you know, when we think about this, part of the motivation, of course, gets down to a core issue of man's sin nature, our fallen condition in which we get pulled into all of this. And not only from the standpoint of consuming it, but then this is big business, isn't it? It's major money here.
Oh, it's a $1 billion industry. Pornography itself worldwide is above $50 billion. Child pornography is above $3 billion. So there's a ton of money here, and you know, just thinking about sex and how it sells. There was something on Tuesday morning on Good Morning America that for me pointed out where we are, what time of the day it is on this. It's 11:59. The new Britney Spears album has just come out. And they did a 15-minute piece celebrating her career. And this is at 9 o'clock in the morning. And they are showing videos of her songs that basically feature groups of half-naked young people writhing all over one another. And the entire piece is just a tribute to her. There is not one word as to, you know, whether or not this is a good thing. and I think, you know, I doubt very seriously that the ABC switchboard was swamped with disapproving phone calls. And that's what I mean when I say we've kind of gone along with it. The kind of wholesale softcore pornography that you see in any mall, that you see, the Washington Redskins football calendar had a cheerleader on the cover that was topless. She had her arms positioned, you know, in a way to hide it a little bit. But basically, this is the kind of stuff that's going on, and we participate in the culture. We shop at the mall. We watch the television shows, and we don't realize that by going along with this, we are help creating a climate where our young people are learning a model for intimacy that is not going to serve them at all.
We've become terribly desensitized to all of this, haven't we? I mean, down through the years, as society and culture have changed, and I would suspect in a significant fashion since the advent of the internet that brings all of this into your home at the touch of a finger, oftentimes whether you want it or not, maybe a lot of people, good, decent people, people that recognize that there is damage and injury that's suffered here when you engage in this kind of behavior on both ends of the perspective, have finally maybe just kind of, what, thrown in the towel, Steve, and figured, you know what, this thing has become so big, so out of control, so behemoth, that it's hardly worth not even fighting anymore because it seems as if you're fighting a losing battle.
Well, I've actually heard some Christians say that, and it really breaks my heart, because my feeling is you wouldn't let your children go out and play in the front yard without teaching them to hold hands and look both ways before they cross the street. And yet, day after day after day, we equip our young people with devices that access this material, and not even just access it, that allow them to create their own material. I mean, that's happening as well now. And we are, you know, we are not equipping our young people to deal with the culture they're growing up in. And I really want to make the point that pornography is not about sex. Pornography is about, it's a fantasy experience. You know, you cut off the power and the screen goes blank. This is about using a fantasy experience and using people, because you're taking something from those people in the video or the magazine or whatever. You're taking something from them without giving anything back. And I think that's what's so dangerous about it. It creates a false model of intimacy. And what's even scarier is that there is new brain science that shows that pornography is actually rewiring and brain mapping traditional intimacy right out of our kids.
Well, and I'm wondering if at that level, Steve, we're not watching a major paradigm shift taking place in society overall. I mean, we've seen great celebratory comments related to things like Facebook and its role in such matters as the toppling of Mubarak in Egypt, and the notion that with the internet and social media, you know, even as much as a horrible dictatorship would try to clamp down on information getting around to people or out of a given country, that this has sort of been the feather pillow from which you'll never stuff all the feathers back into again. So as much as is being celebrated as helping people get connected and stay together, my goodness, here on Facebook, I ran across a buddy from high school from 50 years ago. How wonderful that is. And yet it's creating, I would suspect, this sense of not just false intimacy, but these walls where all of a sudden now levels at which in normative relationships, in historically normal relationships, it's shifted the terms of engagement.
It has, and Facebook and the internet and all the technologies, of themselves, they're not evil. It is always a matter of how we're going to use those technologies. And you're right, those technologies can be used for good. And I mean, here we are talking on the radio and sharing this message. So, you know, I don't encourage people to be down on technology. I encourage responsible use of technology. And just for a moment, I feel like I didn't really address your question about the people who feel hopeless about this. I mean, I always come back to God's mercies being new every morning. He's given us another day. He's given us new children being born into the world. Obviously, if he's given us a new day and new life, then there is hope and there is a chance. And responsible people, people who are moral, not just Christian people, people of all faiths and backgrounds who are moral, have a responsibility to step up and protect our kids. The truth of the matter is, 100% of our kids are going to see pornography before they graduate from high school in this culture. So, you know, people are always asking me what the statistics are. At this point, I think you can throw them all out the window. You're right. The feathers are out of the pillow. This is the world we live in. Our only choice now is how will we respond to it? How will we mentor our kids? How will we get healthy? How will we shine the light of truth in the church on this issue?
Let's pause on that point. When we come back, let's see if we can't touch on some of the answers to those critical questions. I mean, all right, if we recognize the fact, as you point out, our kids are going to be exposed to this. There are those listening right now, housewives, and, you know, folks, I never went looking for this, and I went to this website looking for a recipe, and all of a sudden, we all know what the spam does and so forth. How do you go about equipping your kids to understand what this is and countering what appears to be some very mixed messages? I mean, mom and dad and the church are all saying that this is not good, not healthy, is going to be potentially ruinous to your ability to carry on a healthy, proper relationship. And yet, if it's so bad, why is it so prevalent? We'll answer that question as well. Steve Siller, my guest, founder of Music for the Soul, executive producer of Somebody's Daughter. We're talking today about a recent Harvard Crimson article on pornography and the question of ethics and how addiction to pornography can be so ruinous to so many aspects of normal living. Back to more of our conversation as Lifeline continues.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.